first purport, Prabhupada says Bhagavad Gita is a perfect theistic science. Why? What means theistic?
God.
About God.
Yeah.
Theos, Deus, God. Yeah. Theistic. And why Bhagavad Gita is a perfect theistic science?
Because it explains God perfectly.
Why is it very достoin? Why is it why does it explain God perfectly?
Because it comes from the perfect person, Krishna himself.
It comes from God himself. Yeah, who can better explain God than God himself? In fact, it's not even a question of better, it's a question of possibility at all. You know, we are following the descending path. Yeah, so we cannot know God by our effort. We have to inspire God to reveal himself. So Bhagavad Gita is called a perfect theistic science. Bhagavad Gita means the song of God. So we are studying a song. So devotee's life is based on song. I remember before I became before I met devotees, I saw a Bhagavad Gita in one big literary magazine, and then I read some philosophical book. I was a Buddhist already at that time, and there was one academician. There was one big scientist. I still remember his surname. His surname was Ivanov, which is not so difficult to forget. He definitely was influenced by devotees. Even though he wrote still in the communist times, he couldn't speak everything openly. But he said that thanks to the Bhagavad Gita, a devotee learns the Bhagavad Gita, and therefore a Krishna devotee always has kind advice of his guru right with him at all times. It's like having your kind teacher always with you. And I read it, I said, wow, I also want to, you know, to have my kind teacher always with me. I shall learn Gita by heart. I decided. Then I got one, there was one translation in a Ukrainian verse, but it was far. I mean, you can see, this is what Srila Prabhupada writes, that there are hundreds of translations, but and there was Umapati and Tamal Krishna Maharaj. They were discussing, you know, what's the special feature of the Gita, because they were interested in philosophy and yoga. So he asked the other, did you read the Bhagavad Gita before Krishna consciousness? Yes, I read the Bhagavad Gita before Krishna consciousness. Did it ever, after reading the Bhagavad Gita, did it ever occur to you that you should serve Krishna? He says, no, not even the slightest idea. Did you ever get a thought? After reading that you should serve? But this is the main point of the Gita, right? This is the conclusion of the Gita. So this is why we need Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is, and most imperfect translations of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, we see have the power of creating thousands of devotees, even without the presence of a living person. I mean, you know, breathing person. People just get the Bhagavad Gita as it is, and they can become devotees. So this is a very special power of this book. And of course, Krishna has created this book in a very brilliant, perfect manner. He's God, after all. So therefore, he gathers everybody. You know, so this is why you can have people who interpret Bhagavad Gita either impersonally or, you know, whatever one's inclination is, Bhagavad Gita will appeal to that person. Krishna can attract by morality, by karma yoga, by knowledge, philosophy, by yoga, by bhakti, by explanation of the universe. Yeah, so every inclination, Krishna will explain it, and gradually he will bring everybody to bhakti. Of course, he begins with yoga. He will bring to bhakti, to yoga, then to bhakti, and to pure bhakti. This is a miracle of the Bhagavad Gita, and it's everything is there. Even food is there. In the 17th chapter, all the things are explained there. In the introduction, Srila Prabhupada mentions five main topics of the Bhagavad Gita that you may know. What are the five topics of the Bhagavad Gita? They are, so this is what Purnachanda Maharaj liked to call the mystic triad, or if you know this, you know everything. So, of course, the main is God, right? And then we have chit and achit, or spirit and matter. So we have, everybody knows what's jiva. We have the same word, jiva, right? Jiva dusha. So, it's a soul or consciousness or spirit in general. And this is matter, prakriti. Ishvara, Prakriti, and Jiva. So, by definition, matter is unconscious. By definition, matter is something that's dead. It's an important point.
Sometimes Prabhupada also says that we are also Prakriti. It's just that we are higher Prakriti and matter is lower.
Yes. So, therefore, Prakriti means nature, right? In general, nature. So, this is why I wrote matter. this is lower prakriti. So then what binds jiva to matter is jiva's karma. So 1, 2, 3, 4, and how Krishna controls and stirs and moves matter is by chas, correct? Kala, yes, time. So it's already a very mystic idea that time is an attribute of the material world. So if somebody wants to understand something about transcendence, they must be able to conceptualize things beyond time, which is simple, and beyond karma, means things that are beyond causality. So this is why you will see that every mystic, spiritual, or religious path will include something about miracles. Because this is something that that looks like beyond karma. It looks like something that's not that's beyond just cause and effect chain, right?
So no matter how long we need till we reach perfection, it will be actually no time at all.
if it's of any consolation, yes.
I listened to one. Physics explain the relationship between time and space and consciousness. Is that like the wider the consciousness is, the bigger the space kind of expand, the more the parameter of time kind of collapses into himself. It's like it starts like curving in. So you get like so much into the now that you actually go beyond.
Sounds very mystical.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, those who are actually searching for the truth, physicists, those who are on the front line, mathematicians, they, if they are honest, they will touch mysticism. Those who are honest, they come to a border of matter, and they see, oh, what's beyond is materially inexplicable, unexplainable. And you can see that those big, big names, Niels Bohr, Einstein, Newton wrote, you know, his Principia Mathematica is one book that's known, but he wrote 30 more books on theology and spiritualism and alchemy. So that we don't hear much about. And he is the one who said that the more you learn, the more you see how insignificant is your knowledge. So that's, these are honest seekers. These are honest scientists. And Prabhupada, in some talks, he said, we have nothing against scientists, but why do they try to obliterate God? You know, Aristotle called, he had physics and then metaphysics. It's beyond physics. They have no right to say anything about God. So the very famous atheist Bertrand Russell tried to sidestep this this defect by calling himself an agnostic, that we cannot know. But how, if you cannot know, how do you know that you cannot know? If you don't know, how do you know that you cannot know? Like Prabhupada said, if you're an idiot, doesn't mean that I'm not in knowledge. If you don't know, doesn't mean that everybody doesn't know, right? So speak for yourself. And if you actually hear his criticism, Bertrand Russell, you don't have to, but it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. Basically, most atheists, including the super popular, how shall we call him? Dorkings. In English, I'm sorry, I'm not academic here. But it's ridiculous. I mean, from point of view of science and logic, he defeats only one very limited idea of Christian God. That's the 99% of scientists. That's the idea. They are some Judeo. We can say Abrahamic, Judeo-Christian, Abraham, because Islam also belongs there. So they defeat only this idea. They are against only this idea, which is obviously certainly imperfect. As Ravindra Sarup Prabhu says, every time he meets an atheist, he says, okay, you don't believe in God. In which God you don't believe? Oh, I don't believe in a monster who enjoys frying people in tar. So I also don't believe in such God. Oh, we don't believe in the, I don't believe in the same God that you don't believe in. So,
I just remembered, this was even before Krishna consciousness. I remembered, did you know this philosopher, Slavoj Žižek? He's a very famous.
I was told about him, yes.
He's actually an atheist, a communist. Mm-hmm. But there's one lecture where he actually proved Maya philosophically based on science.
He proved what?
Maya. And the argument goes like this. He says, you know, when you study quantum physics, you get to a certain threshold, and further on from that, you cannot go. And he says, this is like when you watch a video game, and you have some kind of background You know, you play the video game, but there's some kind of background that you never can reach. You see it, but you can't get there because it's just an illusion, basically. There's nothing really there. He said, "See, this is what God did. You know, He made us think that there is something there. We are trying to reach it, but we cannot. It's just an illusion."
Yeah.
Like that.
Anyway, this is of course. You know, in the Soviet Union, that we had several heroes of every joke. You know, there was one Vovochka, Vova. You know, means it's like little Johnny in English. You know, so you had the teacher. People were taught in, I don't know how it was here, but people were taught in the school, children, God does not exist. Don't you dare, you know, it's, there was, you know, it was a big part of, was it also like this here? So, the teacher says, children, let us prove that we don't believe in God, so everybody make a fig and show it to God that, you know, that you don't believe in Him. So everybody shows a fig to God. A little Johnny, you know, is sitting, folding his hands. He says, little Johnny, why don't you show your fig to God? He says, Mrs. Smithson, you know, if, Maria Ivanovna, you know, whatever, if God does not exist, whom am I showing the fig? And if God does exist, I better don't do this. Atheism is a religion. Atheism is a religion, and they are very angry, and they are, and oftentimes it's just based on very faulty. In fact, religionists have contributed by preaching the monster concept of God. They basically created the ground for atheism by preaching a monster concept of God, or some kind baker, you know, type of God. They have created all the basis for atheism, because these are very limited concepts which do not explain reality. So one of the biggest, so Bertrand Russell, he says basically the main problem for atheists, we can say 99.999, is problem of evil. Why evil exists? And Bertrand Russell basically just says that, you know, basically he doesn't know about reincarnation. It can be answered in such an easy and simple way that this is the difference between matter and jiva, that spirit means you are not a dead stone. It means you can make a choice. And making a choice means you can make a wrong choice, right? This is why children rebel against parents, because parents want to limit the choice. And limiting a choice means making you dead. That's why we rebel. I'm not a stomach. I'm not a bag to be kept warm. I have some you know, choices. And as I mentioned, when my parents accepted my choice to become a Hare Krishna, that's when our relationships have become quite affectionate. Because for me, it was a proof that they see me as a human, as a living entity who has a choice. And Krishna, that's a sign of love, right? Sign of love is that you respect choice. You accept that person can choose. So Krishna loves us. Krishna respects us. He allows us choice. Allowing choice means allowing wrong choice too. I was once traveling with Niranjan Swami, and he was talking to my temple president, wonderful person, and the temple president complained, I don't have enough help, I mean, lots of service, and therefore Niranjan Swami, who was the GBC, he said, you need to train people. So how do you train leaders or managers or people who can lead others? He said, you give them responsibility and let them make mistakes. If you don't let them make mistakes, they don't learn. They don't grow. They don't grow. So therefore, this is how Krishna is teaching us. So we have a choice. We can make the wrong choice. And we are taught by the law of karma that there are reactions. There are reactions to that. So these are the five topics of the Bhagavad Gita, which are mentioned by the introduction, Srila Prabhupada, Baldevidya Bhushan. These are the five topics. Of course, there is one very important topic. What's missing here? Yes. This one thing. We can break karma is temporary. We can break karma and use our choice instead of the dead law. Instead of the dead law, we can switch from dead justice to free love, with loving relationship with Krishna, which makes us free from the dead law of justice and reconnect with Krishna. So so without this is sambandha gyan, knowledge of what is, what's reality, what exists. And every philosophy has to speak about these. There is no philosophy which will not speak about God, matter, and jiva, chitta, chitta, and ishvara. Every philosophy. Materialism will say that only matter exists. Consciousness is a product of matter. They cannot explain how. God is a fantasy of consciousness. Then Mayavad, impersonalism, will say that only consciousness exists. Matter is a fantasy of consciousness. And God is the same as consciousness. It's all one, right? But also, God can be accepted by materialists as the laws of physics, you know, some higher law, right? That, you know, when I yes. It falls down, right? So there is, it never falls up. There is something, and sometimes I want to do something, and it not exactly working out to my expectations. Like I was searching for the markers, and they were not there. So even as a child, from childhood, I can understand. Three things are there. There are dead things. There are toys which I can break, and they do not object. There is consciousness. I'm conscious. That's clear. And there is law. There is the law. Dead comes and says, "Why did you break this toy?" Next time you are not getting the little car. or I try to do something and the battery is dead or something. So there is some higher control. And so even a child sees all three, but only the Vaishnava philosophy accepts all three. Every other philosophy tries to wipe out one of them, deny existence of one of them. Only Vaishnava philosophy accepts the reality of the reality. The reality which we see. So this is the only actual philosophy which deals with what we experience. Other philosophies try to deny something, either this or that. They try to deny or other things. So this is, if you know this, Purnachandra Maharaj says you know everything. You know this, you know everything. This is the, he calls this mystic triad. The mystic triad and. Or triangle. So, so the Bhagavad Gita gives a perfect explanation of all these. So, to, today we are going to talk about the first six chapters of the Gita. We can roughly divide the Gita into three parts. First six Karma Yoga, next six Bhakti Yoga, last six Jnana Yoga. Karma, Bhakti, Jnana. Bhakti is in the middle. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says it's like a jewel case. Yes, you have read. It's like a jewel case. With gold down, gold on top, and jewels in the middle, right? So therefore, karma and jnana are protecting the most valuable things inside. Or like a sandwich, you know. You have the cheese or veggie burger inside, and you have bread on two sides. And what makes the veggie burger nice? That thing inside, right? So bhakti makes karma and jnana work, he says. That's why it's put inside. Because without bhakti, it doesn't work. So it has to touch both sides. That's an interesting explanation of why it is inside. It's hidden, confidential knowledge. You have read the Gita, right? So can you please try to say, what do you think are the main points from the first six chapters? What do you think are... You know by heart?
No.
No?
Not anymore. I used to know.
Oh, you used to know, yeah? Yeah, it comes back. If you learn, you know, what the minimum degree of remembering something is recognition and quick relearning. So if you put some effort, it comes back. Kurukshetra. Yes.
The first chapter, as I remember, is also the immortality of the soul.
The second. Immortality of the soul. Very important. Yes. That's probably one of the biggest lessons from the Bhagavad Gita. Immortality of the soul. Dear friends, brothers and sisters, we are immortal. How does Prabhupada usually put it? You are not this body. Which, is there anything that troubles you in life? The good news is you are not that. You're not that situation, that circumstance, that body. You're free. You cannot die. They cannot cut you, burn you, drown you, choke you, nothing. You are invulnerable. You are invincible. Hare Krishna needs. This is, what is it? It is the fourth stage of intoxication, right? One is drunk, yes. I'm invincible. People are happy when they understand this. Just this one thing is enough to take out the sting, you know, they say, to make life tolerable. Just understanding things pass, but I don't. And that you are a happy, eternal spirit. Happy eternal spirit. So whatever is not happy in your life, don't worry, that's not you. And if some situation you don't like, good news. You're not that. You're not that. Any other lessons you remember from the first, from the beginning of the Gita, first, third? Doubts. Yes, Arjuna has many doubts. Yes. And what do we do with them? Yes, we deal with them with knowledge, through knowledge. So we,
weapon of knowledge.
So you do not have to become scared of doubts, just figure things out. Doubt is a sign of intelligence. Doubt means you see a contradiction. That's how we came here. We were taught that pleasure your body, gratify your body, and you'll be happy. So we tried and tried, and we were not. So we thought, there's some contradiction there. Maybe I'm not the body. And then you see devotees, they say, yeah, you are not the body. So this is the...
In the fourth chapter, it speaks about how knowledge is passed on...
Parampara. Yeah, that's also good. And also it gives the secret to whom actual knowledge is given. So Krishna says, I reveal this rahasyam, secret, because you are
very devoted.
Yes, you are bhaktosyama sakhachati. You are a friend and a devotee. So it shows that only a devotee can actually understand Bhagavad Gita.
Why does he separate this, a friend and a devotee? Isn't somebody who is a friend of Krishna automatically his devotee? How does that go?
He starts with bhaktosi, you are a devotee, and then he specifies more specifically that among devotees you are in a friendly relationship with me. So I understand this is how it goes. And this is the first time he uses the word bhakti. Any doubts there? If you have been in any Krishna temple, or if you have had any meetings with devotees more than five times, you must have heard at least 50 times, you are not your body. You are not your body, right? And therefore we tend to skip it. We tend to take it as, you know, it's not even an information. It's like, it's very clear. But in fact, this is a very powerful piece of knowledge. This is the first secret of the Gita. There are four levels of secret in the Gita. Altogether, five levels of knowledge in the Gita. And this is the first secret, that you are spirit. And you can act with the body, but instead of being bound by karma, you can be free. You can be liberated by yoga. This is the first secret. Krishna's instructions in the Gita begin from 2.11. And this is his first, very first verse. He says, if you have the book, you can please open to 2.11. And we can chant. Shri Bhagavan Vacha Ashocham anvashochastvam pragya vadamscha bhashase gatasun agatasunscha nanu shocham dipanditam. So he says, you speak like a learned person, but learned, actually learned people, they do not lament about gatasuna gatasuna, about dead or alive, Prabhupada says, but the acharyas give some interesting comments saying neither about the gross body or the subtle body. They don't lament about gross or subtle body. Because about the breathing bodies, we don't usually lament. And what is the conclusion of Krishna's instructions in the Gita that everybody knows? What's the most famous verse that Prabhupada is known to have quoted most frequently? Sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam vraja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha ishyami ma shuchaha. Which means, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I will free you from all the reactions of your past sinful activities. Do not fear. So it starts ashochyam. Do not worry. And it ends mashuchaha. Do not worry. It's one of the six ways to analyze a text. You see if a text is written properly. You see how it starts and how it ends. And you can see the first word Krishna uses, ashochyam, don't worry. The last word Krishna uses is mashuchaha, don't worry. So it's a 45-minute battlefield crash course in stress management. And there is another beautiful fact about it. If you usually we have in every book, we have at the end the guide to pronunciation of Sanskrit. And you can see the Sanskrit alphabet there. And by the way, it's when the Europeans have discovered this chart that gave start to the Western science of grammar, because it shows how it's where in your mouth you pronounce ka cha ta ta pa. It goes from the back to the front, ka cha ta ta pa, and they are voiced, unvoiced, aspirated, ka ka ga gha. So it was a big discovery for phonology for the Westerners, and that's how it started. So you can see that the first letter is a. And the last letter is ha. And Krishna begins a shochan and he ends ma shochaha. So it's like A to Z. It's constructed also in you can see it. There are so many, if you study it, you can see that every letter is perfect. Every letter is like a jewel in the Bhagavad Gita. It's so nicely done. So this is the first lesson. This is the first word Krishna says. You are spirit. This is the very, very first verse, very, very first instruction. And you can see that sometimes some other religions, they even over the whole book, they cannot quite figure out what are we, what is soul. You even have Christians who say there is no soul. At least two big groups, nice people too, who claim there is no soul. After 2,000 years of studying, but Krishna, that's his word one. He says, you are spirit, you are beyond, you never die. And in fact, this is first level of secret, and this is something you can. This is also the first practice. It sounds very simple, and we have heard, and especially since we hear this a lot. But it's not accidental that Srila Prabhupada repeats this so many times. So you can, whatever you do, throughout your life, whatever you do, just experiment with this, that as you do things, bring it back to your mind, that I'm not this body, I'm spirit. You can even think this right now. We are spirit, we are eternal, we are indestructible, we are full of bliss and knowledge. I'm not the hand and pen, I'm not the eyes, I'm not the tongue talking, but we are talking, we are listening, we are acting. This is called karma yoga. This is the first. So acting with this understanding, karma yoga is the entry to jnana yoga. Acting with this consciousness, acting, understanding that I'm not the actor, I'm not the body, and the fruits are not mine. The fruits are not mine. Do you have any fruits? Are they yours? the results. So, of course, in bhakti, this happens very naturally. This happens automatically. In bhakti, how does this happen? You just understand it. I am an eternal servant of Krishna throughout all the lives, and we are not the doer, because we act for pleasing Krishna. If you do something out of love, then naturally you are doing this. You are not passive because you want to do something, and you are also not fruitive because you want to please the person. You want to give it to the person. So love automatically includes loving action, automatically includes in when it's really love, it automatically includes that paradox of yoga, acting without acting, work without working, which is this, and it is secret. It is secret because we can be practicing our bhakti, we can be practicing yoga for so long, for 20 years, and we still think that yoga means doing something just with the body, right? And just getting some results with external actions, right? This is very activating. Here is the other one. This one is, if one is really dead. Life is tough. even in yoga, even in bhakti, you also want? Even you know, we are we come to sing for Krishna, we go distribute books on the street, and we after some, or we chant Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram 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 Hare Hare. We serve, we serve devotees, serve prasadam, and we think that yes, this is yoga. But yoga cannot be done without consciousness. Yoga happens only if you work on the desires. If you consciously choose the motives, then the yoga starts. It cannot be done just, you know, just these external things. It's it may be good for health, you know. You sit, you know, okay, do this. Okay, that's good for health, right? But if I think I could do this only after becoming a Hare Krishna, after chanting. Before that, I couldn't. True. So, just this, it's just an exercise. But if I understand I am not the body, and the fruits, even the good health, is not what I aim at. My goal is reality, to become real. So then that's actually yoga. So therefore, this is what you can do throughout your day. You can you are not the body. You are not also the action. You know, all the actions that you are doing, okay, that may be your duty, or that may be your service, or that may be the instrument for you to offer your energy to Krishna and to change your consciousness. But in itself, it becomes yoga when you actually offer, when you actually remember, I'm not the body. Means I'm spirit. Okay, only you, I'm not gonna do this for the girls. That's okay, but you're not that kind of body. And I think you're all right. You So as we eat, as we whatever we do, that's actually a secret. It may take many years until we catch that there is a secret. It sounds very 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 simple. You're not the body, but you know, just taking care of the family, taking care of taking bath, everything we do, right? It starts with choosing. What's the result of this activity? And then saying, for a karma yogi, saying, I am not the enjoyer, or I am not the sufferer, which are both sides of the same thing. But for a bhakta, it means Krishna for you. Okay? Cleanliness for you. And whatever results for you, your glory, that's for you. Right? Then it's yoga. Otherwise, it can happen that we spend many years in the temple or in the movement or in the society, and we don't feel the advancement. Or it becomes just a religion without the spirit, right? So yoga includes. So this is why you have these first six chapters focusing how you are not the body and how you need to act with this understanding. And that means not for the result. This is called karma yoga, karma jnana yoga. And because, why? Because Arjuna says, he makes mistake number one. He says, of a transcendentalist, of a yogi. He says, Krishna, I don't want to enjoy the kingdom. After all, you know, why should I? That's my nature to be a kshatriya. But if for enjoying the kingdom, I have to kill, and not only kill, but kill relatives or be the cause of this war, I don't need that kingdom. So, therefore, I go to the forest. Which shows his good qualities, right? which the first chapter, oftentimes we criticize Krishna, Arjuna, saying he's put in Maya by in illusion by Krishna. But Baldeva Vidyabhushan and Madhusudan Saraswati, they say that it demonstrates good qualities of Arjuna. What good qualities are demonstrated there when he refuses to fight?
Soft heart.
Soft heart, yes. Prabhupada. The last purport in the first chapter, Baldeva Vidyabhushan and Srila Prabhupada says that only such a soft-hearted person gets the right to understand spirit. Right? Because if Arjuna came there and, let's see blood, would he be a good candidate for learning about spirit? So that's one. Yes. What other qualifications he shows, demonstrates? Yes, he accepts the religious principles. He follows the religious principles. Yes? He accepts Veda. What else?
God is his best friend.
Yes? Okay. What else? What other? He says those who create disorder in society, they go to hell. So that demonstrates he understands there is knowledge about the soul, that he's not the body. There's reincarnation. He can then by refusing the kingdom, that's how this quality is called.
Detachment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, detachment. He's ready to be detached. So the acharyas are saying that these are the qualities of a disciple. Therefore, Krishna says that Artha Shastra, so 2.11, Prabhupada says that he has rejected the social principles, because by social principles, aggressor can be killed, must be killed, right? But, so that's Artha Shastra, just, criminal law, you know, if they attack you and you kill the attacker, you're not punished. Even some years ago in Govardhan, my friends told me that there was one Babaji, and he had a gun, because it's a dangerous place to live. And in the night, some dacoits tried to enter the ashram, and he shot him. I think he even died, because he shot him in the leg, but somehow I think he got him into artery or something. I think he shot him. So the police came, and this Babaji didn't have a license for a gun. In India, you can own guns. You can own guns, but you have to have a license, and it's quite expensive usually. He didn't have a license, so that was not legal. But the police came and they checked this dacoit, and they said, "Wow, we've been searching for these guys for many years." So they said, "Okay, we will say that we shot him." It's okay. Don't worry. Because thank you. they didn't give any hard. They didn't give hard time to this Mamaji. So by criminal law it's accepted. But Arjuna. So it's dangerous, because these dacoits, they can actually kill. And he had these brahmacharis there, so he was protecting sadhus there. But in the case of Arjuna, there was not so obvious. There was a kingdom. So Arjuna rejected just the right to kill the aggressors for the sake of morality, of kindness, of compassion. So he rejected Artha Shastra, criminal law, for the sake of Dharma Shastra, being kind, being ethical, being moral. And therefore, by this act, he deserves to get Jnana Shastra and Bhakti Shastra. Right? So by being kind, he can get knowledge of spirit, spiritual knowledge. So he makes, it's a mistake, but it's a noble mistake. So what is his mistake? His mistake is that if I don't want the kingdom, therefore I don't need to fight. If I don't need the, if I don't want to enjoy the kingdom, therefore I don't need to fight. I don't need to work. And Krishna explains to him that you are still thinking as a materialist. It's mistake number one. We think that this is Maya. I don't want karma. I don't want reactions. I don't want rewards. So therefore, why work? But it's the same. What's the fault in this? What's the materialism of such thought? What's the materialism in such rejection of work? Yes. Okay. All right. Yes. So we think that work always must be for a fruitive result, right? So we still think that work is mine, is for my results. So if I don't want my results, therefore no need for work. So it's still materialistic mentality. It's still materialistic mentality. So therefore Krishna says, karmanyevadikaraste, your qualification is you work, do your duty, ma phalesu kadachana, but you don't have a claim, you cannot claim the results, ma karma phalahetur bur, and when you do work, don't think you are the owner of the results, the creator of the results. This is very famous, 247 Gita. Mate sangostva karmani, but don't be attached to lying on a sofa or even under a tree. to akarmani, to not working, to be lazy, right? So work without working. This is the this is karma yoga. Any questions here?
Materialistic mentality, considering who he was and everything.
Otherwise, there would be no class today. If he didn't, that's his seva. That's his because it's such a natural mistake. It's such a natural mistake. So therefore, he demonstrates this. He goes through this, and then he gives Krishna a chance to present this beautiful book, so that for thousands of years we study and get the benefit of this. So he's as you know, to get such wonderful explanation, he has to give the good questions, right? So giving good questions is also service. So that's his service to us, to Krishna, and because Krishna wants to benefit us by giving us the gift of the Bhagavad Gita.
I remember once I heard that Prabhupada supposedly said that he was covered or something like that.
It's in the purport, yes, that was covering of Yoga Maya, so that he was put in that illusion, so that Bhagavad Gita could be spoken.
Yes. Yoga Maya. Not Mahamaya.
He's a devotee. He cannot be covered by Mahamaya. It, you know, it's the same energy, but it acts in different ways. for devotees, it connects. Yogamaya is something that connects, because he comes with his questions to Krishna, and he does service, and Mahamaya disconnects. They go away from Krishna. That's the difference. Any other questions or points here?
Questions, but he was the platform that he knows, but it was just for the for source.
Yes, for the for everybody's benefit. Yes.
But then there is no question of being covered. If you're covered, that means that you are not no longer on that platform consciously, isn't it? That's how I imagine.
So it depends on the perspective. You know, if you take the perspective of the whole life of Arjuna, then this is service. If you zoom it in into the moment, then it's sort of a cover. So he agrees to get covered. It's like, you know, you have a chess master who has his eyes bound, you know, bound. How do you call it? Not bound.
Folded.
Blindfolded. And then he wins, right? So from from the moment, yes, he's blindfolded, but from the larger perspective, that's actually his choice, and that's his expertise and his series. Main point of the first page coming. Thank you. Okay, it's all okay.
Be good.
Yeah, if you can do. This is certainly the primary point, primary lesson here. Then the paradox of yoga, work without working. That's the application of this. Yes, if you are not the body, then the work is not yours, the results are not yours, but so also you don't have, like Krishna explains in chapters 3 and 4, you don't have any reason to work, but you also don't have any reason not to work. If you are not the body, if you are not depending on the results, you don't need to work, but also the work doesn't bind you. And also, you don't have any reason not to work if there is a higher purpose for that. And he explains that nobody can avoid working because the spirit by nature is active, and everybody has to support the body. And even if you are a yogi in the forest, you eat dry leaves, you have to chew them. Is it work or not? And even if you don't chew, you have to breathe. That's an activity. That's an activity. It's an automatic activity, but that's an activity. So and nobody can not act. So therefore, you need to learn to act without false identity and without attachment. And then the miracle happens. Then you realize your spirit. Knowledge awakens. Through karma comes jnana. Through karma yoga comes jnana yoga. Automatically. You don't have to. Jnana yoga, sannyas in the forest, requires a high level. You already have to have a high level of understanding. That's why in our society, taking sannyas is... you can see there is a long waiting time, and it's such a trip, you know, to just apply to, because they want to make sure that a person is not doesn't fall. But karma yoga is safe. Karma yoga is safe. Do we see? Is it? Can you see? Not much, huh? Yeah. Maybe you can pull this back there, so it's bigger. All the way to Sabina Malini. So, for me, this was a big huge breakthrough when I first participated in this Bhakti Shastri to learn about the yoga letter. Can we do even further? Let's move it all the way here. Okay. Yes. Because before that, it was like the nectar. I was always yearning for. How do we say? Okaterim hrepeni, dusha zmeri hrepeni. Because I had been a devotee by that time for about 3 years. And by that time, I realized that a pure devotion or purity, being pure and realized, is quite high. And that I'm not pure, that I realized. And at the same time, the material life is definitely not something I want. And it's behind, and it's not something I want to go to. So therefore, I felt it was a feeling like floating in empty space, this weightlessness, like, okay, Krishna is somewhere far away there, and material life is somewhere back, and I'm just, I don't know what to do. Where am I? How do I get? How do I jump there? Right. But this Purnachanda Maharaja's course, for me, this was the amazing, mind-blowing breakthrough. Because all of a sudden, it turns out that between here and there, there's a staircase, there's a ladder. Like if you need to go to Uchilnica on the first floor, if you had to go there without the ladder, you have to be a monkey or a parkour master, to somehow get there. But if you give a ladder or a staircase, you can see today, small children do this. Right? So for me, all of a sudden, finally, I felt, there's a ground under my feet. Okay, there is karma yoga. I can first be sakama, no problem. What's the difference here? You can see that, we can read, right? That's the usual life of enjoyment. This is unregulated sense gratification. It can be animals, can be humans, but it's unregulated. So then the first civilizing line, when you regulate, when you do this according to the religious principles. But we are still selfish. And this is why so many of us don't like religion, because it's still based on personal gain, personal sense gratification. And therefore, it's still materialistic. That's karmakanda. Now, what's this line between karmakanda and karma yoga? What makes the difference?
Initiation.
Amazingly enough, no. Because here, the person can still be full of desires, and less even austere than some karmi. You can have a karmi. Who is the most austere person known in the Srimad Bhagavatam and in the history of this day of Brahma? Hiranyakashipu. Right? Hiranyakashipu. So, but was he, an actual yogi? No. So the difference is the aim. Here, the aim is personal desire for sense gratification. And here, the aim is spiritual world.
This means that karmi basically is not an insult, like some devotees are saying you shouldn't call other people insults. It's actually a compliment.
It's a compliment, yes, 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 yes. And then, and so this is what Krishna explains, that you work in your heart. So there is no yoga without inner sorting of our goals. Why, what do I aim at? Why am I doing this? And consciously setting that my aim is the spiritual world. For us, of course, it's Krishna, Krishna Bhakti. It's Krishna Bhakti. So when you do this, when you say, and just a karma yogi outside of school of bhakti, without bhakti, I mean, just a shadow of bhakti, then he will just renounce, okay, I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not the enjoyer. I want to be free. I renounce fruits. I renounce fruits. And then Krishna describes that in the fifth chapter, the magic transpires. What's the magic? The magic is that you renounce fruits, but what happens is that you become nishkama and your ego dissolves and knowledge awakens. You actually realize, I'm spirit. I don't need these things. Actually, I'm free. So that's automatic transition to Jnana Yoga. And then you meditate more and more focused, then that's Jnana Yoga. And because you meditate on Krishna, then you develop attraction, because Krishna is all attractive. So we have this explanation because bhakti contains all the other yogas within. So one can go through these steps in Varnashram, which takes millions of lifetimes. One can go through these steps quicker in mixed bhakti. Or they can just be steps of quick, like in an elevator, Prabhupada says, in bhakti. But it's still useful to know what are the levels, so that you can, as I said, all of a sudden I felt the ground under my feet. Oh, these are the steps I go through. At first, be detached from the fruits, then be detached from the false ego, and then work on focus on the Lord. So this is the conclusion of the first six chapters, that bhakta is the best of all the yogis. Yes.
I would just like to clarify something. When we say fruits, we usually mean the material result.
Yeah, not bananas, not mangoes.
No, but the point is, I'm trying to raise is sometimes you need a certain type of result if you want to please the spiritual master, which is the goal.
This is why it's a paradox. This is why it sometimes takes even a devotee 20 years to catch this contradiction, this paradox. Yes, I must produce fruits, but no, I must not be attached to them. And it's such a thin balance, because I even start without desire for fruits, and then they come. And there's nice fruits, and then who worked? Well, so then whose fruits are they? Well, and this is the danger. This is the danger in bhakti. I get attached. Can be gross, unfortunately. Can be subtle. Name, fame, glory, or power. So therefore, this is why we need to study this. This is why we need to remember this and re-surrender and surrender more and more subtle things, even in spiritual life. And always remember that bhakti is not just the body activity or even mind activity. It's the intention, the heart, that it's not mine, it's for Krishna. So all the fruit. And we need to produce fruits. Yes, we want to produce fruits. As Mahatata Prabhu mentioned, what's the point of your being Americans if you don't do something wonderful? And Slovenians are, I think, wonderful people. So what's the point of being a Slovenian if you don't do something amazing? You already do amazing things, so you can do even more. But for Krishna. So, experiment. You know, remember, I'm not the enjoyer, I'm not the doer, and naturally it happens when you understand Krishna for you. It's already yours. It's already yours. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.